All right, here we go. Welcome to a new bonus episode of Oh My Word. And we have an awesome, awesome special guest with us here today. Wait for the build-up, wait for the build-up of the music. Boom! Beautiful, there it is. All right, so our special guest is Heather Buchta, which is a very appropriate last name. I don't even know if I'm saying it right, but I think it should be the last name because book and that, and it fits. So author, writer, Heather Buchta, welcome to our program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure and an honor, and I'm so excited. So let's begin. Let's get into it. So how on earth did you get to here? How on earth did you get into writing, become a writer, published author, all of it? What is the synopsis of all that?
I'm really bad at synopses.
Oh, no, yeah.
That's such an all-encompassing question.
Right.
I will take you and fast forward through my childhood.
Okay.
I read a lot, but I was outside a lot as a kid. But my friends and I I do remember constantly making up games and stories and building worlds. And I do remember a couple memories that kind of stand out now as, like, I've always loved to create stories. And one was we would always go over to my friend's house, and her parents, I don't know if this is just me, but when I was growing up, I remember, like, I have so many memories, and I don't know where our parents were. Like, your parents weren't in the house when we were, like, doing all these elaborate games.
Right.
So we were latchkey kids, and we just kind of did our own thing. But one of them was we'd have, like, five kids over at a house, five or six, and one, like, three of them would hide throughout the house, and then one would be the tour guide of this haunted mansion.
Oh.
And the other one or two would be, like, the visitors of this haunted mansion. And so we would stage it, like, three of them would stage it, and then the tour guide would create these elaborate stories as they would go into, like, a bedroom of, like, who died in this room, like, 20 years ago, and, like, how they visit every night or something like that. And then randomly, like, someone would hop out of the dirty clothes hamper with, like, a Cabbage Patch Kid with his head off, you know, or something. Like, so
wow.
We'd scream and we'd run out. And so, like, we would create these, like, big elaborate, like, stories. That's kind of how we had fun. And then I remember in fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, we each had to do a book project, and it wasn't like a novel, but it was we had to make these books that were like 20 pages and, like, write a few sentences on each page, and we had to illustrate it and create our own covers. And I think that was the first time I recognized story, because you read a lot, but you don't really analyze it as a kid.
Right.
That we had to have, like, a beginning, middle, end. There had to be something wrong before you could make it good again.
Right.
We just did, like, I did a lot of creative stuff as a kid, and I would love to create, like, newspapers for my friends and that sort of thing in junior high. And then in ninth grade, my parents moved me to another state, and we had a guest speaker one day in my English class who was, like, a struggling screenwriter, and he was, like, a previous student of the teacher. And he was talking to us about writing, and he asked, hey, by a show of hands, who in here wants to be a writer? And nobody raised their hand. And I remember
I was
so bummed because I didn't know anybody. And I, like, was in a new state, and I just wanted to be seen.
Right.
And so I just threw my hand up. I never thought about writing as a career in my life before. But the rest of the class, he talked to me as if, like I really did want to be a writer. He,
right,
like, focused on me. And afterwards, I remember, like, oh my gosh, I, like, think I really want to be a writer.
Wow.
And so that kind of triggered it. I had a long way to go.
Right.
And then I majored in screenwriting and communications, and I realized I was really bad at screenwriting through, like, 4 years of it. Right. And I didn't really want to do it by the end, but I just got my degree. It's an amazing gift to be able to be a really great screenwriter, but it's really hard. And so I didn't kind of know from there what I wanted to do. And one day, shortly after college ended, my roommate at the time said, hey, like, I just had the most elaborate dream, and I really think you should write it into a book. And so we went to Denny's, and she wrote it all out on napkins. It was this crazy elaborate, like, story. And it was just kind of the bones of it. And I was like, okay, I'll do that. And so I wrote this middle grade novel with a YA voice, because I didn't know the difference between voice back then.
Right.
And I thought it was brilliant. And I was like, oh, it's the next Harry Potter. I just have to send it and everyone will love it.
Yeah.
And none of that happened. And I got like a bunch of form letters, of course, in response from publishers. But it started this like kind of excitement about like, oh, I could learn how to do this. So I jumped to YA. And I wrote a YA. I worked really hard on outlining, and I did it the old-fashioned way, where I had met Michael Barrett at a conference, and he was my number one choice of agents. And so I sent him a query along with like 20 others, and he and Michael Stearns and another lady were the only ones that responded asking for more pages. Right. And so I responded to all of them, and I didn't hear back from Stearns. And Michael said he needed more time. And the lady, who was really kind, said, I totally want to sign you. And she was part of the Ashley Grayson agency, who was really big back in the Christopher Pike days. But I hadn't really heard much YA-wise, like, recently. And so I was like, I don't know, but someone's excited about me.
Right.
So I emailed Michael and just said, hey, someone's interested. And he said, well, give me a few days. I'll call you. And so he called and he proceeded to say like, hey, I finished reading your manuscript. It needs a lot of work. And I was like, oh, he's calling to be really nice about the rejection and give me like a personal rejection rather than a paper rejection. And I was like, okay, do you want me to work on it? And then I can maybe send it back to you with revisions. And he was like, no, I'm saying that I'd love to offer representation if you're willing to work on it. And I was like, wow. Oh, okay.
Wow. So
I said, you know what? Let's not, like, don't be desperate. Like, don't be that girl.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, let me think about it for a couple days. And so immediately I got off the phone and I was like, oh my gosh, like, he just offered me representation. And he was like my first choice. So I waited like a day and a half and then I called him and I was like, I'd love to sign with you.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago. That was, I think, like 2008. We've had a really long journey.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So that was kind of where it started. And then I wrote and I wrote and I wrote and I wrote so many manuscripts. And every time he would submit or he would read it and be like, we can't submit this one. We got to shelf this one.
Oh,
and
man. And
so I would write another. And through it, like, he was such a great refiner of work, too. He would tell me what worked and what didn't. The first manuscript that he signed with me was a very quiet novel, and he knew it would be a hard sell. But he said that he wanted to try because he liked the voice.
Right.
And it didn't, and he wasn't surprised. But we continued to write, and every time it would get closer and closer. The book that recently was published, Beyond the Break, in June, actually happened because, we had just submitted a football thriller that takes place in like small town Texas, and it's by far one of my favorites. And it came so close, it went back and forth, and then it just fell flat.
Oh.
And a publisher contacted him, Francesco Sedita, and said, "Hey, I have an idea for a story that really, like, I'm just out there looking for it. I haven't found it yet." And he said, it's a story about a Christian, a YA standalone, about a Christian thinking about losing her virginity to her guy. And he said, can be funny, poignant, serious, whatever, just needs to tick the Christian box and the virginity box.
Wow.
And it, you know, for the mainstream market, which is very interesting.
Yeah.
And he added, think of Katy Perry's Teenage Dream, but as a book. And so I was like, well, and Michael called me and he was like, why don't you just hammer out like some sample chapters and we'll send in the sample chapters. Like, we've got nothing to lose. Just give it a shot.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, I will do that. Like, why not? You know, like, I'm not published yet. So I sat down and I mapped out an outline and I shot out like five chapters of just, and it was interesting because, you know, that's the basic premise, but you can't have 400 pages of a girl like being like, should I do it? Should I not
right.
do it? Like, should I do it?
Right.
So you needed like a lot of like character arc to get her to that point. And you needed an outward motivation, which I chose to do surfing because they were on a quick timeline. So on the off chance that it did sell, they wanted it on the shelves by June 2020. And this was like like February 2019 or March 2019.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah. So I sent it out and it was like, it was crickets for about a month. And then I thought best case scenario, they would ask for more chapters because I only sent about 40 pages in. And then Michael called me one day. I was like actually at Mountain High, like teaching a high schooler how to ski. And he called and was like, hey, I'm at the DMV, but I just called to tell you that they made an offer. And I was so shocked because I didn't know that was an option. And I was like, I don't understand. What do you mean they get an offer? I'm like, on what?
Yeah.
And I was like, I haven't written anything. And he's like, on what you sent. Like, they want to make an offer now. You can finish it the way you want to, but they love the voice and they want to do that. So I said, what do I do now? Because, like, what happens now? Like, I've never gotten this far in the game. And he said, well, now I get to be your agent, and I'll talk to them and figure out what I think is a fair deal, and then I'll call you back. And so that's how it happened. And then it was a whirlwind. They wanted the first draft in by the middle of July, and it was April or May when I signed.
Oh, wow.
So luckily I had loved the story, and so I'd continued to develop it, through outlining and character development and stuff like that. So it was still very insane, and I pulled a lot of all-nighters, and there was a lot of tears along the way of like, oh, I can't do this. But it was always, I always felt like it was such a privilege to do it too. So I wasn't that grumpy about it. And then we went through a million edits back and forth and back and forth. And then we jumped to copy edits and then it just came out June 2nd.
Yeah, wow. I saw it. I didn't fully tune into it until I actually saw it in an email from Penguin. Mm-hmm. You know, books to look for in June. I'm like, wait a second, I know this name from somewhere. Wait a second, this looks familiar to me. And it was such a great moment. But for you, that's, it's over 10 years, 11 years of nothing, and then everything just moving so quickly, especially to get something published in like less than a year when usually everything, even if you do sign, it could take up to 2 years for publishing.
Yes.
So that's amazing.
I loved it. I often equate it to like, it felt like I was in college finals week, like cramming for like 10 months straight. Like it was intense, but it was really fun too. I learned a ton through the whole process.
Oh, that's good. It's like a crash. You got your experience crash course in your X amount of months. Well, yeah, that's good. So I'm actually going to backtrack a little bit and then we'll go back to the book. I'm just curious that if you used to play this haunted house game, I'm wondering if you ever thought about going into horror.
You know, it's so funny. The last two books that I've written have been, two YA books manuscripts. Let me clarify.
Right.
Last two manuscripts, have been thrillers. And I do love that genre. I don't think I read horror enough to be able to like write it well yet. I'm still learning a lot. I can't, like right now I've just published a romantic adventure. For my next book, I can't really just jump into thriller. It'll probably be something a little more comparable to Beyond the Break.
Right. And then I don't know what my next question is going to be. Okay, we'll ask a different question. What happens, I don't know if you could say it as a blanket rule or anything like that, but do you find that a lot of authors are in your situation and that unless they have this dazzling debut that sells right away, a lot of them don't sell whatever manuscript was their first manuscript for a year or two or three or however long it ends up being? A lot of the authors that you've met, have you found that they've been in a similar situation that might land an agent but don't necessarily land a publishing contract right away?
Yeah. I would say the ones in my circle who have been published have been because they haven't been married to that first manuscript. A lot of times, like we're so married to it because we pour our whole heart into it and it's like our first one and it's our baby. And a lot of times those are, they're dead manuscripts. You know, they taught us a lot about writing, but they're just not very marketable.
Right.
And I think that's what happened with Ernesto Cisneros and Ephraim Divided. I mean, that he's written a lot and they've been really good. And Ephraim Divided was not his first manuscript, you know, but sometimes it takes a lot of writing and rewriting, and sometimes it takes a brand new manuscript.
Right. And I remember I actually spoke to I met Ernesto once in passing, and I said something to him, and he said, no, I was always a YA voice, and then I moved over to the middle grade for this book, and this is the book that sold. So it was just, I guess it's also, you just got to be open to feeling around a little bit and seeing, oh, okay, I'll try the story, I'll see it.
Yeah.
But, so this book, Beyond the Break, has a very big surfing theme, and you mentioned this football thriller, so... Sports are a big part of your life. You just ended up gravitating toward them in writing for some reason.
Sports are a huge part of my life. Yeah. I grew up kind of just outdoors, and I played soccer my whole life, and I fell in love with obstacle course racing after college. And I love movement in general. And I love books, and I love movies that have a lot of movement involved in some sort of, some way.
Right. So, have you actually been surfing? Because when you look at the reviews, everyone is just saying, well, not everyone, but it seems like many of the reviews are like, I want to get a surfboard and get on the waves now. But it was so descriptive. It was so well done, the way she spoke about surfing. It seems, I think you've got a bunch of readers now inspired to go surf.
That was my hope. Okay. I do surf. My roommate and, college buddy all through the years, Vanessa, she is much more of a surfer, I would say, than I am, but I'll go out with her, and I can surf, but I'm not amazing. Like, I can stand up, but it's nothing to brag about. I do love it, though. There's something about the water and the ocean, and there's something just magical and poetic about it, and so I wanted to really convey that, where it was, where she felt closest to God, and so I would often, when I would write, I would go out to the ocean and just sit and journal, like, what everything that was going on around me, sights, smells, like, sounds, everything, so that I could kind of incorporate it into her, like, surfing experience.
Oh, wow. Well, I just want to note that standing up on a surfboard is pretty admirable for those of us who can't. So for us, you're ready. You're a surfing master already for a lot of us. So good job.
Okay, I'll take it.
Yeah. So that you wrote this Christian themed focus, big theme in the book, is that anything personal that you did, or is that because the publisher wanted it and you're like, yeah, I think I have enough background or I have enough knowledge of this that I can put it in?
Yes, absolutely. He asked, and so my agent called me, and because when, you know, we've been friends for a while now, working together, and he just knows, you know, like, that I am a Christian. And so he said, you know, try writing this from, you know, like, a Christian character's perspective. So definitely not me at all. Like, she's far cooler than me in so many ways. She was really fun for me to write and to dig into. And it was fun for me to create a character where, like, she wasn't raised in the church. And so it's not the cliche, well, her parents believe, so of course she believes. It's right. Her parents actually don't believe anything. And so... So it was fun for me to write that dynamic and to have her dig into, I think, a lot of questions that a lot of high schoolers have, and not provide answers for everything, but have a kid who has, like, a friendship with God and like, enjoys talking to him the way that she does talk to her friends, you know, and yet she hangs out with friends who aren't Christian at all. And so you get that very real, like, raw friendships of high schools that I don't think you would get if it was, like, a strictly, like, Christian publishing house.
Right.
Because a lot of that would have to be edited out just for content. So you get a girl who's just living real life and out there in the world and trying to figure out how she can balance, like, still loving God in the midst of everything.
Right. So, I guess you're already kind of touching on this, but was there ever a sense of, I have to be so careful not to say X or to say X because I don't want there to be a wrong portrayal of a religious girl or religious character?
You know, the only thing that would go through my mind is, like, I'm not going to entirely please everybody. Like, like, the Christians aren't going to feel that it's Christian enough, and the non-Christians are going to feel that it's too much.
Right.
And so I'm just going to write this story and let the chips fall where they may. You know, like, I'm going to create this character and just run with it and just try to write a really good story, you know, about, you know, a girl and her surfboard and, you know, a guy who messes it all up.
Right.
So, yeah.
And they didn't tell you which direction they necessarily wanted the book to go in. That was up to you to decide the direction.
Yes, absolutely. They were on it. They were like the dream editors that you could have. They gave me such good insight on everything. I look back at my notes and there were so many that they gave.
Right.
And in retrospect, I would say like 90% of it was like spot on. And I'm so glad I took their direction.
Right. I've worked with two different editors before, and I definitely agree that when you've got a good editor, writing a lot helps you as a writer, but you have to have that good editor who's going to take you to like the next level almost. Mm-hmm. That's what I feel from my experience. And this is also different because how often does a publisher actually pitch the book versus the agent or the writer pitching the book? It seems you just landed in the right kind of situation. Or I don't know, do you know of anybody else who's had that kind of situation where the publisher was like, I really want X. Can you give me X? And they were like, okay, I'll do that.
So I think the most similar thing is just manuscript wish lists, where you're hoping that you already have a book that someone pitches out on, you know, Twitter of like, hey, I really want this kind of book. And so I think, you know, maybe he was hoping for something that might have already been out there, but he couldn't find it. So he just was like, hey, do you have a writer who could pull this off in a really short amount of time?
Right. And I wonder, does he specifically have a good relationship? Well, I don't know if you know, but does he specifically have a good relationship with your agent? Or maybe he just called your agent that day and then everything was directed to you then?
You know what? I believe that he does have a good friendship with my agent. Francesco tends to know a lot of people, and he's pretty well spread out, and he's very creative. He's doing all sorts of stuff. He has like a podcast, and like he has his own books, and he's a publisher, and he's a editor. Like, I mean, he's just but I do think that he knows Michael well, and I would say that he would consider him a friend.
Right. See, that's always the thing, because everyone talks about how writing is such a lonely kind of pursuit or occupation, and yet networking is so, you have to talk to people, you have to know people. To mm-hmm. were you someone who, this is just like a general personal kind of question, were you someone who always spoke about the things you were writing, or you kind of never said anything about it until you actually signed?
I don't usually share any of my like works in progress because feedback really messes me up. Like messes up like the kind of the line that I'm trying to travel down with my writing.
Right.
Because I would love to say that I'm not affected by personal opinion, but I unfortunately really am. So I try to just keep it quiet until I've got a completed work, because I don't mind editing something completed. But when it's halfway done and people tell you different directions to go, you end up kind of getting paralyzed.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Do you then participate in a critique group, or only after the manuscript is done, you'll show some pages to like, hey, how is this going to go over?
You know what? It's usually after it's done, and right. I have a specific like few people that I send it to, because I know their style, I know their voice and how they write, and I also know that they know how to pick out what I need to refine. Often it's cutting words, and I appreciate certain people in my life because they will highlight every single word that I don't need, and right. It makes manuscripts so much tighter.
Yeah, I think we forget sometimes how we get blinders almost for our story, and then until somebody else comes in, they're like, hey, wait a second, like, there's other options here, you did this too much, and like, maybe I did. Great. I'm on a, why am I forgetting all my questions? Okay, I don't know. Like, this is good. Everyone's just going to hear, like, me forgetting all my questions. So what did you do in between getting published and all the manuscripts that you were writing? Were you also doing other kind of writing in the meantime? Or were you like, okay, my day job, quote unquote day job, has to be something that's totally removed from writing?
Well, I actually taught in the inner city for 12 years, English. I was a high school English teacher. And then I had a really great graduating class one year. It's too long of a story to go into, but they all basically went to four-year universities. They were and one of them had told me in the beginning of the year, like, you're kind of burnt out, like, you should take a break. And then at the end of the year, she was like, you should graduate with us. Like, this is a good time to retire. And so I was like, I should, because she was like, you're always saying how you want to be a writer full time, but like, you know, like I thought to myself, like, I'm going to be 80 and still be saying that if I don't, like, make the jump.
Yeah.
So I figured out stuff with my finances and other jobs that I could do and still have time, because teaching is all time consuming.
Yeah.
So I did. I quit with them that year, and I started writing full-time while doing, like, five other jobs. So I worked at the airport part-time so that I can get benefits, and it's, like, ramp work, so it's, like, physical labor, which I love. And I'm interacting with people who I normally wouldn't in, like, my normal social circles, and I love hanging out at the airport. And then I, you know, was doing Airbnb for a while, and I tutor SAT and ACT, and then I youth pastor part-time at a church. And so all these things together allowed me the freedom to write full-time. So that's kind of what I do now.
Well, that's, like, ironic to say that you had to have five jobs to work full, to write full time. It's like, yeah. Where did you find the time? Yeah. I think also a lot of people don't realize that so many writers have other jobs, because writing doesn't pay what it should. Let's just be honest about that. We should all be millionaires because we are wonderful.
That's great.
Yeah. So for yourself now, because I think most writers agree that being a writer means that you still have to read a lot, and that's just part of you, you know, being better at your craft and just knowing what's out there. Are you reading a lot of contemporary YA romances now, or do you mix it up? Like, what do you read, like, for fun? Or if you're going to pick up a book, what kind of genre are you going to go for?
It's all over the place. This year, I neglected my reading so much because all I was doing was writing. But I've finally been able to, like, get back reading again. It's interesting if you talk to authors, like, when they're meeting up against a deadline, how little they, like, really have time to read.
Yeah.
My book was compared to, by Penguin, to The Moon and More and Just Listen, by Sarah Dessen. And so I haven't read either of those, so I bought them to read this month.
And, oh, yeah.
When I am just having fun, I love a good thriller. I just finished The Woman in the Window by A.J. Finn, which is, like, a grown-up book, which I rarely read. And then I recently bought just a couple Penguin titles, and I also just bought A Good Girl's Guide to Murder because it just had a great cover. I'm a sucker for, like, really good cover.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I'm just kind of getting back into it now. I usually warm up by reading, like, 10 pages of another book, 10 to 20 pages, and then going into my writing. So that way it just kind of gets me in the kind of the writing head.
Did you feel like they did a good comparison once you read the Sarah Dessen book? You're like, yeah, I guess it is kind of the same thing. You're like, okay, I don't see it, but I'm glad you have that down.
You know, I actually haven't read these two. I just bought them.
But
they did say, for fans of Sarah Dessen and Jenny Han, which I think was, like, the greatest authors to possibly be compared to.
Yeah.
Comes to that genre, you know, like, they do their genre really well. And I love Jenny Han because she's just kind of wholesome and fun and goofy. And,
yeah,
like, I think we miss the goofiness a lot in YA because things tend to be very edgy. And she's just, it's just silly sometimes you're reading and you find yourself cracking up over something really awkward.
Yeah.
So she can nail that really well. And Sarah Dessen just takes her time developing relationships, and her pacing is much slower than most YAs that you read nowadays. And yet it works so well because you just kind of get pulled into her story and you enjoy every page. You don't feel the need to, like, rush through it, but you, like, don't want to put it down either.
Right. Right. Well, I don't know if you'll have a for sure answer for this, because who knows what's going to be, but now that you've had a book out with the main, you know, with a big publisher and it's a mainstream title that does have a strong Christian theme, do you feel like, oh, good, I'm going to try to keep a Christian theme, whether or not it's going to be big or not, in my books, or, like, who knows what will be next?
I don't know. I've never written a Christian book before. This is brand new to me. And so I've often wondered, I was like, you know, like, does this mean that I'm going to be pigeonholed and people will want this for their next, or my fan base is going to want another, like, similar book,
right,
or do I branch out? But right now I'm just like, you know what, like, I never thought this book would be published, and it was. So who knows what the next one will be? It could be entirely different, and there could be a fan base that shows up for that too. And so rather than worry about, oh no, like, I'm just trying to, like, enjoy the fact of, like, oh my gosh, you got published.
Yeah.
kind of a cool thing, and it deserves to be celebrated even in the craziness of this pandemic, even in like social uprising that's going on. Like, it was something you worked hard at, and that's okay. Like, it's okay to celebrate that and still be in tune to like what's going on with our nation, you know, and sensitive to everything else that's happening.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we'd like to think also that a good book, whether or not it's, you know, exactly up your style or, you know, exactly the style I've done before or not, that a good book will be read and find its audience. We hope.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay. So I always like to end off with asking, just because we're getting closer toward pushing over time now. So I always like to end off with asking, I love it when writers or publishers or, you know, whatever you want to fill in there do X, and I really can't stand it. I really wish they wouldn't do X. So you have to fill in the blanks for both of those.
Okay. Yeah. I really love it when writers wreck my day. So like if a book just like 2 weeks ago, I didn't even know these characters existed. And now like I'm putting aside like hanging out with friends and going out and like getting my like to-dos done because I absolutely need to know what's going to happen with this story and how it's going to play out. And it carries so much weight and importance in my life suddenly, like just from the point that I opened the page until now. And so I love it when a book can do that to you. I think that for me, it deems it a great book if I absolutely like have my day wrecked because of it. And it doesn't even have to be a Pulitzer or like, it doesn't even have to be like literary. If it just has the way of making me like put aside other things to finish it, I think that's a solid win for that book.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So what would you say then for like, you don't, not to be too negative, but like, I really wish they wouldn't do X, or I don't like it when they do X.
I really hate it when it's so funny because my fellow writers, I love them, and I've had such a positive experience with my first publishers that like, and my agent is incredible, and I can't really think of negative, but I can with myself of right. Like, I hate writers, and I can fill in so many blanks for stuff that I do in my writing.
Okay.
And one of them is when writers are repetitive. When you write an entire book, you realize that you describe certain things with the same exact word or phrasing, and you have no idea you do it until you look at an entire book and use the find and replace button. And suddenly, like for me, it's like I describe emotions using breathing and breath all the time. Like she exhaled slowly, or she had a sharp intake of breath,
right.
Or she breathed through her nose and like tried to regain like, you know, her poise, or like she like held her breath. Like everything is breath, breath, breath.
Wow.
And so I had to go through and like, it's okay to have a few, but like, there's gotta be other ways that she's experiencing breathing.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. And so it's just a constant like thing for me to be aware of, like my repetitive phrases to try to be more versatile. I think that's one thing I loved about the most recent book that I read, AJ Finn's The Woman in the Window. He never really used the same phrase to describe something twice. It was very, everything had such variety even in the description. So that's one thing I seek to do a little bit better with my writing. But the writing community itself, like I love how supportive everybody is. And
right.
I'd say if anything, like I would hope that writers aren't negative, like in reviews of other writers, you know, or, you know, if it's not a book that they agree with, that they would just either leave it alone or they would point out like, this was great about it, and just let it go at that, you know, because that writer, even if it's a book that you think is positively awful, that writer spent some time on that, you know, it's their livelihood, and you want them to do well in their life, hopefully, regardless of, you know, of whether or not you loved the book.
Yeah. And another reader might like it for the reasons that you didn't like it. So you might not like that reader then. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. What's wrong with the reader? Yeah. Oh, I actually didn't ask. Maybe we'll try to squeeze the question in here before we get our theme music going again.
Okay.
How much, I don't know if it's been different now because of all the shutdowns and things like that, but how much of your time, especially once the book is out, is about promoting the book and getting, you know, getting places and just talking about it and things like that versus like, okay, I wrote the book and now everyone like take care of it now, you know?
No, I know. You know, I've never experienced it prior to this. This is my first book, so I don't have any comparison.
Right.
But I do know that Penguin Teen has been incredible in terms of their social media. They really are great, and they'll do a lot of stuff on their Instagram and on TikTok.
Yes.
That's been really helpful for like with record reads. They'll recommend my book or they'll put it, you know, they put it in a stack of books alongside John Green books, which is, I mean,
wow.
Just incredible. Yeah. They've really done their job. They have a great publicity campaign that they wrote out for me. It's difficult for me to do anything aside from just empower them in any way I can.
Right.
And I mean, I can't go to school visits. Teachers can't get class sets right now, things like that. So the best thing I can do is just reach out via email. And a lot of times it's crickets because, you know, everyone's getting a lot of emails right now, you right. know. And so it's reaching out to youth groups and church groups for this particular novel and schools and hoping to hear back. But you just at the end of the day, you're just like, well, I hope it takes hold. And people enjoy it. It's just a fun read. It's one of those reads where you just enjoy, you enjoy following her relationship, and it's a great surfing story.
Yeah.
So, you're hoping like for that genre, the people that enjoy that genre would pass it on to their friends.
Yeah.
You just hope for the best. You can't really do much more than that.
Exactly. Well, yeah, that's true, because any publicity campaign, however good it's going to be, is only going to be as good as it lands almost. So everyone should just take the book, sit on the beach with the book, hold it up high so everyone can see the cover, and just everyone go and do that, right? That's what we got to do.
Yes. Perfect.
Yeah. All right. So here we go. We're gonna play up our theme song again, which, by the way, this theme music we have written by Tim Burke, and you can check him out. He's going to be in. You can find him in our episode notes, and Heather's information is going to be in our episode notes. And we thank you all for joining us for this bonus episode of Oh My Word. You can listen directly on my website, eltenenbaum, ENENBAUM.com. Find us on social media. And it's been a pleasure and a treat, and we thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
For sure. It's been great. And everyone, go look up the book. Go buy it. Go. Well, that will sign out. Go buy the book.
Thanks for that little plug.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Cheers, everyone. We'll see you next.